Fortress of Doom, The Conquest of Constantinople, Part 1, Episode 25.
The representative of the most serene Lord Emperor of Constantinople appeared before us and reported to our leadership on the preparations that are being made by the Lord of the Turks to take the city of Constantinople. No doubt, unless something is done with regard to provisions and the garrison, the city is under great danger. When the envoy arrived from Constantinople and asked for help, we answered that he should understand our situation in Italy, and that, for the most part, our hands are tied. We cannot aid the great city.
What you've just heard was a dispatch to the Venetian top leadership in 1452. An envoy from the Byzantine Emperor Constantine the 11th was dispatched to Venice with the mission of obtaining aid from fellow Christian powers in the West for the Byzantines. Welcome to Empire's Podcast, The Ottomans. I am Frank, your host. It looks like we have finally made it to that period in Ottoman history, known by Ottoman history lovers like myself as the Conquest of Constantinople, and by our Byzantine history peers as the Fall. If you recall, in episode 24, Sultan Mehmed II had been busy signing peace treaties with the West, which also included Venice. And unbeknownst to the Byzantine envoy, the Venetians had long since settled accounts, at least temporarily, with the Ottomans. The mood in the Venetian synod was not to rock the boat, especially after the Crusader defeat at Varna, which happened way back in episode 21. The Sultan had agreed to cede certain islands just off the Greek peninsula, and the giant Ottoman fort of Gallipoli was, for the time being, allowing Venetian galleys to sail through, while largely preventing their rival, the Genoese, from doing the same. The Byzantine envoy came back to Constantinople in the spring of that same year, empty-handed. The only promise of aid came from the Pope in Rome, whom agreed to raise an army in attempt to declare a crusade, provided that the Eastern Orthodox Christians unite under the Roman Pontificate. And my listeners are by now well aware of how well those promises turn out. So what then soured Constantinople and caused them to reach out suddenly and beg for help from, well, anyone who would listen? A few things, as it happened, were going down. In 1451, while Sultan Mehmed II was away in Anatolia, Constantine the 11th thought it prudent to send over some officials and demand an increase in payment for the upkeep of the Ottoman prince Oran. Oran had been held in the city for years, and the Byzantines hoped to hold the Ottoman prince as leverage against the Sultan. If the Ottomans did something the Byzantines didn't like, well, they could do the same thing they did against Murad II, release a prince with men and money, let them cause havoc in the Ottoman Empire, and who knows, with a bit of luck, they might just ignite another civil war, such as during the early reign of Sultan Mehmed I. But, as we shall see, Sultan Mehmed II was a different beast altogether. and it would be a common shortfall of his enemies in comparing him to past Ottoman sultans. From the vantage of Constantinople, Mehmed was an upstart 19-year-old kid. Yes, you heard me right. All the Netflix and History Channel documentaries, they've got it wrong, because they often portray Mehmed as either an old man or even a younger guy in his late 20s or 30s during the period of the conquest. Now sure, the Ottoman Empire was the most deadly existential threat the Byzantine Empire had ever faced, but Murad II, Mehmed's old man, had done the heavy lifting for the young sprout, so the saying went in the Byzantine imperial court. What the emperor of the Byzantines, Constantine XI, couldn't understand because of his lack of poor intelligence that managed to work its way into the Ottoman Empire, was the man Mehmed, who took the throne in 1451, was fundamentally different from when his father first placed him on the throne in the 1440s. Back then, Mehmed had been untested and unsure of himself, and committed many blunders in his first reign as sultan. But in the intervening years, he had earned some street cred. First, by administering Anatolia after his abdication, then in raising his impressive and professional and highly trained bodyguard, of which we covered in episode 24, the famed Hounds, and the close circle of ambitious and intelligent advisors and other top officers he surrounded himself with. Then, Mehmed campaigned with his father Murad II and was present at the Second Battle of Kosovo, which you can listen to in episode 23. In the Islamic and Christian world, battlefield victories were the currency of legitimacy for a government, and now Mehmed was able to take the throne, already having a scorecard. I've touched some on the friction, and at times open warfare, between the old guard of Turkish families from Anatolia versus the new blood coming in from the Balkans, a product of the Christian boy slave tribute called the Dervishirme. So I won't get too much into it here, but I will say that in order to keep both of these factions from tearing each other to pieces, or to prevent them from turning against Mehmed himself, the Sultan was constantly on the move from 1451 through 1453. Sitting around in Edirne wasn't going to cut it. Last time Sultan Mehmed tried that strategy, Kandarli had turned the Janissaries against him, and they had nearly killed him. So, deep in Anatolia, the Byzantine officials were shocked to discover an entirely different Mehmed waiting on them. Then, when the officials approached him with the demand of more payment, already the Ottomans were paying Constantine 300,000 ducats of gold a year. The officials relayed the emperor's demands to double the amount. Mehmed upbraided the officials publicly, and then told them in the summer of 1451 that time was running out for the Byzantine Empire. After Mehmed crushed the Karmanids, he headed back up to his capital at Edirne. There he ordered every Byzantine official in the Ottoman Empire to be rounded up, shake them down for valuables and money, confiscate their property, and then the officials, along with their families and friends and business associates, were promptly expelled from the Ottoman Empire. From every corner of the Turkic realm, little zones of Byzantine autonomy, an enclave here, a village still nominally under the control of Constantinople, became occupied, the officials beaten, their property looted, and the erstwhile officials, along with their families and friends, began to pour into Constantinople as refugees. Simultaneously, Mehmed gave orders for hundreds of blacksmiths in the empire to relocate just outside of Edirne, where he had tents and living spaces built, to work all day long on doing nothing but producing weapons. Mehmed also sent his own message as an official response to Constantine's demand for additional payment concerning the prince Oran. In the letter, Mehmed detailed exactly what he was going to do to the prince if he ever got his hands on him. And Mehmed refused any additional payment to the Emperor of Constantinople in return for keeping Oran on the leash. If the Byzantines were going to play at their old games, Mehmed dared them to try it. Meanwhile, Mehmed's navy was being constructed at Gallipoli, and his officials reported the first galleys would be ready to challenge Venetian and Genoese mastery of the Turkish Straits by the middle of the next year. In late 1451, he gave orders that 1,000 workers be assembled just a few miles north of Constantinople itself on the European side of the Bosporus in order to build a massive fortification. Along with the workers were specialists, military architects, and 2,000 janissaries, and a further 1,000 Sepahi cavalry to act as an escort and defense of the campsite. And this event is where this episode gets its name, the Fortress of Doom. Why Fortress of Doom, you ask? Well, first, it was where the fort was located. If you head on over to the website, I've got a blog post up with a map showing the Bosporus Straits and the fort's strategic location. Basically, Constantinople had a chokehold on shipping entering and leaving the Black Sea area due to these narrow straits. For years, Ottoman troop transport had been hampered, threatened, and thwarted due to Byzantine, Genoese, and Venetian mastery of the waters in the straits. This prevented the Ottomans from efficiently moving their armies back and forth where they needed to get them to. As I said in episode 24, Sultan Mehmed spent his time in Anatolia after he was forced to resign, where he spent his time studying the past Ottoman attempts to take Constantinople. The conclusion he reached was that the Ottomans needed a navy and a fortress that was capable of shutting off shipping at the Hellespont, another name for the entrance to the straits from the Black Sea, and thereby prevent Constantinople from getting reinforcements, and also allow the freedom of movement for the Ottoman army. On the 15th of April, 1452, ground was struck and the laborers began the arduous task of digging, cutting large limestone, laying bricks, and mixing mortar for what is called the fortress of Bog Az Kesen. In Turkish, this means quite literally straight cutter. Another important fact is the Turks already had a fortress on the Anatolian side, but now just a few miles north of Constantinople on the European side, whose territory ostensibly still belonged to the Byzantines, the Turks were about to deal a major strategic blow to Constantinople. The emperor in Constantinople, along with its citizenry, were in a panic when news reached them. First came the influx of citizens from the tattered remnants of the Byzantine Empire, who began to flood the city, and then the treasury was soon empty, and now news of the Ottomans building a fort which would cut the Byzantines off from the Black Sea. The Black Sea was important to the survival of Constantinople, and the failure of the Ottomans in the past to fully blockade the city was a big reason it managed to survive so many sieges. First, the Black Sea had several Byzantine colonies spread out all over the basin, from modern-day Crimea and Ukraine, along the coast of Romania, even the shores of Anatolia. It was also a source of grain and money from the spice trade. More importantly, other Christian powers were in the area around the Black Sea as well, the most important of which were the Genoese. I don't know if I've said it yet, and it deserves to be said, but the Genoese could have an entire podcast all their own, probably clocking in at several hundred episodes. But, for our sake, I'll simply say that the Genoese were the sometimes best friends and at times worst enemies of the Byzantines. However, geography and happenstance makes for strange bedfellows, and the city of Constantinople could always count upon Genoese help, because if the great city fell, Genoa would be cut off from her colonies, which were vital to the city-state's economy and society. The work side of the fortress wasn't spared the presence of Sultan Mehmed either. He headed down from Edirne in May of 1452 to supervise the construction. Day in and day out, the Sultan would get up before dawn, attend the Muslim call to prayers daily, and watch over the workers. At times, he'd award hard-working laborers on the spot with gold, if he was impressed. Others, if he thought them lazy, he'd have them flogged publicly, or even executed, if they made a really bad impression upon him. The end result is that the workers were motivated to get the job done and do it in record time. The fortress itself still stands today, and if you happen to travel to Turkey, you can actually visit it. It is a massive complex covering over 30 acres. Normally, a project like this back then could take a year or more to complete, but the Ottomans got the job done and did it well in under 4 months. Even Mehmed's top advisors weren't spared in having to get their hands dirty in this matter. The building of the Ottoman fort wasn't just a military strategic coup against the Byzantines. It represented a political victory over the Turkish Old Guard Gagala families. For decades since the interregnum, they had clamored on about the Ottoman state's future, which should lie in the Muslim Middle East. They didn't want to besiege Constantinople. So we can add reluctant administrators, governors, and generals, as so many reasons why sultans before Mehmed II had failed to take the city of Constantinople. But now Mehmed forced two members of the old guard to put their own personal money on the line, and he forced them to fund the construction of two of the fortress's four towers. One of these visors was Kandarli himself, while the other three were funded by some of Mehmed's most diehard supporters, whom represented the new blood. This was a public testimony to not just Mehmed's political orientation, but is signal to the entire Ottoman world that his vision of the empire was fundamentally different from that of Mehmed I and the geriatric ward left behind in power by his father. For good luck, Islamic mystics and astrologers had ram's blood mixed in with the mortar for the first layer of brick, and sacred Islamic numerology was employed in crafting the design of the fortification itself, and the fort's construction looks like the initials of Mehmed, a picture of which you can see on the blog post for this episode. While construction was underway, Emperor Constantine XI found himself running out of options. The Byzantine Empire had long lost its landmass and had, throughout the centuries, been stripped down and was only composed of distant and disjointed holdings here and there all over the eastern Mediterranean. Now, thanks to Mehmed's fortress, they'd be cut off from the small spots of possible aid. Another problem for the emperor was money. A big source of Byzantine income was coming in from the Black Sea trade. However, in order to secure military alliances from the Venetians and Genoese, the Byzantines had been forced into several trade concessions, which cost the empire's treasury dearly. Then, with the Ottomans arriving and gobbling up all the arable land around the once great Byzantine Empire, the city of Constantinople lost its other cash cow, the taxes that had once come in from the land and farms. A profitable venture had been to invite cast-off Ottoman princes into the capital to be held as hostages, an offer many Ottoman princes in the past had taken up freely, as the policy of fratricide, enacted at the accession of a new sultan, would mean a grim death for any male relative of the sultan. However, As we just heard, Mehmed wasn't having any of it. He moved fast to kill the remaining male princes he could get his hands on, and only a few remain unaccounted for, and these he could ignore them, because their claim was tenuous at best, and Mehmed had every intention of taking the great city of Constantinople, hunting down this alleged half-brother, Oran, and having him executed. The emperor of Constantinople, compared to the Ottomans, had an absolutely pathetic army. Composed of a few thousand regular troops, these guys were untrained, ill-disciplined, and poorly motivated. When I was reading about the emperor's soldiers, I was kind of reminded of the King's Guard from Game of Thrones. Any true help would have to come from mercenaries and volunteers from Western Europe, as it was starting to look like the Roman Catholic Church wasn't going to be able to call a crusade this time. So the Byzantine emperor played the only card he had left. He went whining and badgering Sultan Mehmed II, demanding he stop construction of the fortress at once. Or, well, something bad would happen. You'll see, Mehmed, trust me. When these messages failed and went unanswered, the emperor begged, pleaded, promised the hand in marriages of any princesses the sultan wanted, the very treasure and gold of Constantinople itself, anything that would buy off the sultan. Such bribery had worked in the past, but after 2 weeks of being pestered by officials from Byzantine, Mehmed, still at the construction site, had had enough. It is recorded he penned an angry letter, pacing back and forth in his tent in the presence of the Byzantine officials, and dictated the following to his scribes, that his words were to be directed to the emperor of Constantinople.
I am not depriving the city of anything. The emperor controls nothing beyond his moat. If I wish to build a fortress at the sacred mouth, he has no right to hinder. The entire region is under my control. The cities east of the mouth belong to me. The western regions are also mine. Do you not remember the distress and danger faced by my father when the king of the Hungarians launched his expedition? They advanced by land while the Franks sailed to the Hellespont and blocked the straits, denying passage to my father. Back then, he survived numerous dangerous situations and swore that he would build a fortress on the western shore. Why are you trying to stop me? Am I not allowed to do as I please in my own territory? Go tell your king. The present lord does not resemble his predecessors. He will easily accomplish what they failed to achieve. He eagerly wishes to succeed in what they proved unwilling to do. I will skin alive any man dares talk to me of this matter in the future.
By August of 1452, mere 4 months later, with the fortress completed, Emperor Constantine XI could do little except prepare his depopulated, financially broke, and starving city for a siege. Meanwhile, Mehmed went back up to Edirne, but not before stopping down in Gallipoli to inspect the progress of his navy. By November, he was back in the Ottoman capital, and he sent word out to his ministers and governors to prepare for war in the following year. By February of 1453, the official call to muster went out to every corner of the empire, and even abroad from the larger Muslim world. Not to mention a few Christian mercenaries showed up as well. The Ottomans would assemble the largest army they'd ever fielded up till now for a field trip down to Constantinople. I'd like to thank guest narrator Soren Narnia. As you can tell, he has an incredible voice for podcasts. And if you are curious, he has a show of his own called Knife Point Horror. I can't recommend Knife Point Horror enough. It is unlike most any other audio drama podcast you've ever heard. I highly recommend it. You will find a link in the show notes to his site. Well, folks, it looks like we finally made it. The conquest of Constantinople is just around the corner. And by the close of 2023, we should have the city firmly within our grasp. Just a little shopkeeping, we will be covering the conquest in episode 25, but it's going to have multiple parts, this being part one. So far with the research I've compiled, my gut instinct is telling me this could be a five-parter. As usual with the show, we will not be rushing things. I think the podcast is heading at a very comfortable pace, and I enjoy taking my time in observing all the fascinating aspects of the Ottoman world. On that point, each episode will now have its own blog post moving forward. So when I talk about this or that fortification or geographic feature, I won't have to spend a paragraph describing something that is pretty abstract for a lot of our new listeners. So don't be surprised when during the middle of an episode, as you've just heard, you hear me say something like, and you can learn more by clicking the link to the episode's blog post from here on out. With that being said, you can click today's episode blog post. There is a link in the description below. I would also like to mention that I am absolutely indebted to the works of Marius Philippides and his co-author Walter Hannock and their monumental book, The Siege and Fall of Constantinople in 1453. This work is chock full of rare primary source material, many of it from contemporaries of the time. Episode 25, The Conquest of Constantinople, I can tell you right now, guys, it wouldn't be as rich, in-depth, and engaging if it weren't for their work. There is a link in the show notes below, and I hope that you'll consider purchasing their book. If you are an avid fan of Ottoman history, it absolutely demands a place on your bookshelf. And if it helps, this isn't an affiliate link or anything. I won't make one red cent if you choose to buy their book. Although, maybe a message to the authors for me, if you do decide to buy it. Tell them Frank sent you from Empire's podcast, The Ottomans. Next time, we're going to get Sultan Mehmed down from Edirne. And he is going to go where his heart truly longs for, Constantinople. From there, it will be a few episodes before the Ottomans breach the walls. However, thanks for sticking with me, and I'll see you next week.